Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of four episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
The following podcast contains the word fuck.
Give it up for They Might Be Giants. They'll be back throughout the show to brighten us. A huge thank you to They Might Be Giants, who are not only the most delightful musicians I know, but they're also very philosophically difficult. And I would give you this conundrum from their 2002 album, No, which I listen to a lot with my children, which goes like this. Clowns are from the circus. Barking comes from dogs. Eggs come from a chicken. And log cabins come from logs. But where do they make balloons? Hello, and welcome to the Slate Political Gabfest for December 28th, 2017, the Conundrum Edition. We are live in front of a sold-out crowd of noisy and morally confounded New Englanders in the Wilbur Theater in downtown Boston. And I want to start by saying that for too long, this beautiful city has been held hostage to the moldy old wisdom of Ralph Waldo Emerson and Henry David Thoreau. And tonight we come to jackhammer their names off these marble walls and carve new ones, Bazelon, Dickerson, and Plotz.
We
new philosophers, to cogitate and to mull, to consider and to weigh, to ponder and to puzzle over the most important problems of our age. Such questions as, would you rather put clean clothes on your dirty body or dirty clothes on your clean body? And is it insulting to get someone the gift of a cleaning service? So now let me introduce the night's combatants. First, on my far left, standing 6'1" tall, the reigning world champion of gentlemanly interrogation, an atlas of judgment, a colossus of conundra, the Rob Gronkowski of pure reason, John Dickerson of Face the Nation. And to my near left, standing 5'9" tall.
Eight. 5'8". Go ahead.
5'8" tall. A leviathan of contemplation, a titan of tendentiousness. The very best of Elena Kagan, Sonia Sotomayor, and Ruth Bader Ginsburg rolled into one. The pride of New Haven, Connecticut, Emily Bazelon. I'm David Plotz of Atlas Obscura, the Zeno to their Socrates. So let's start our conundrum show with one we already mentioned. Emily, would you rather put clean clothes on your dirty body or dirty clothes on your clean body? Which is the right thing to do?
Okay, so I tried this one out on some of my law students and a couple of friends this week, and I got impassioned but different answers, which bodes well. I feel like the natural answer is that you want your body to be clean and your clothes to be dirty. But here's the thing, and I'm not actually sure either of you are going to relate to this, but if you're on a long backpacking trip and you're dirty and you're irritated, okay, you will relate to this, but David kind of hates like nature, so I wasn't sure.
False.
No, but like long hiking.
Four Pinocchios.
Not
go ahead.
Big. Anyway, okay. So if you're on a long backpacking trip and you're irredeemably dirty and you've stopped worrying about being dirty, it's like not bothering you at all anymore. You can smell however you smell, and that's just the way it is. It's actually really great to put on a clean pair of socks. I really love that moment where you dig that last clean pair of socks out of your pack.
I'm not going hiking with you. No.
You're going to take
my
socks?
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think that's right. But isn't that overstating the case? Like, I mean, in that case, any kind of relief from the kind of fuming, fetid cloud... of effluence is welcome. So what are we talking about here? Are we talking about mildly dirty or?
Well, I think if under Emily's circumstances, the clothes are absolutely, you know, filthy.
Well, you can't even be clean for dirty clothes then either, although I guess you could take a dip in the stream.
Right. That's true. I left that possibility.
I'd rather take a dip in the stream than put on some, like,
clean
warm
socks.
Because frankly, I did all this hiking. I got all sweaty and I got all the way up here to this incredible stream. I'm unlikely to find the socks more appealing than that cool stream that I jumped into.
I'd agree with that you should definitely bathe rather than wear clean clothes. But I will say that when you come across people who smell, they usually smell
clothes.
Because of their clothes, not because of their body.
It's
and
true.
Therefore,
and if you,
that's something to think about.
Right. And if you feel clean and then you put... It's all about smell, right? We're not talking about caked with mud. Like, who cares about caked with mud, I would argue. It's all up to do with odor and, like, sweat.
But that's for other people. Isn't this for you?
But don't you feel really self-conscious when you think that you smell? I do. I don't like that feeling.
Unless you're not self-conscious enough and somebody needs to write you a little note anonymously.
Well,
and
right.
Say, you're kind of, yeah.
Right.
All right, let's go on. Next one. This is an audience question. Your phone somehow connects the internet and the cell towers of 2025. You don't know how long you have to stay connected. What do you do?
I call myself to see if I'm still alive.
How do you think your number would be? You think the number would be the same?
It's
well, you. How would you call yourself? Because you'd have your number. You'd call and your phone...
Well, how would I get cell service in 2025? I mean, give me something to work with here, buddy.
Don't you want to know?
That would be a terrible thing to find out. Why would you want to know that?
I don't know. Well, perhaps it would inspire me to do something to either A, keep myself alive, or B, do something incredibly powerful with the remaining years I have, like figure out how to go into the future and call myself.
I think that's too spooky. I would want something really boring. Like, I'd want to make sure that all the countries that currently exist still exist, like our country in particular. I'd want to know, like, do we still have the United States of America?
That's a...
Do we have
you
elections?
Go to Wikipedia and look up United States
no,
of America?
No, I mean, you could figure that out by asking a more interesting question, like, who's president and what's the balance of power?
Well, I think I would.
Oh
call.
My God! You guys are. It is so obvious. You go and check the stock table.
I was just going to say.
And you're like, oh.
Invest in
X. What happened?
X.
And yeah. You know, and who won the last 10 Super Bowls? You can lay bets on that.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
No. You
we're
could
thinking,
do that. Well,
we're yeah. No, that's smart.
That's smart. We're not as smart.
Can you imagine if your 2007 self had been able to do this, and you called and you did just what you said, and
that
it's like,
be...
oh my God.
Well, that was like that guy who got what like came back from somewhere and didn't believe it, right? Yeah, someone who was an Afghan POW, like caught, right, came back from being in captivity and did not believe that Donald Trump was president very recently. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Thought it was a joke. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, here's one that's kind of timely. Would you rather work for a great boss who's a terrible person or a boss who's bad at his job but a great person? Actually, let's poll the audience. Let's do that. That's always a fun
That's
thing
a
to do.
That's a good idea.
So, all right,
so the first one, don't do anything yet. First, we'll do cheer for great boss, bad person. Second, would cheer for bad boss, great person. So who would want a great boss who's a bad person?
Woo!
Who would want a bad boss who's a great person.
So, but what if your definition of a great boss is that they're a good person?
Well, that's obviously, then you start arguing. That's what happens.
I want to know how they're a bad boss.
Well, how they're a bad boss or a bad person?
Yeah, no, the bad person's like easier to imagine. I mean, they could be a bad person in many ways.
But what if they're a bad person wholly outside the context of work?
I don't think that. You have to imagine their bad personhood means they're mean and they're not, like, they're hard to work for.
Then they're not a great boss.
But you could be very strategically good at making judgment calls. There are lots of magazine editors who are not. My boss is accepted.
Present company accepted, yeah.
Many, many companies accept. But right? Like someone who's very authoritarian and doesn't treat people well and is undermining but has excellent judgment. You didn't speak. And you're the boss.
I think if you define bad person to say that they're an unpleasant person to be around in the office, then if that's your definition, I guess I think the good case is this is a person who is like outside of the office is a total humanitarian. They're constantly, you know, going to Médecins Sans Frontières, and they're raising foster children, but in the office, and they may be lovely in the office, but in the office is a mess. Company's total wreck. No one knows what they're doing. It's losing money. Or someone who's an absolute beast outside of the office, who's on his seventh wife, has cut off all of his children, commits crimes, but in the office is just like making sure everything is happening. I think I would take that person. Yeah.
See, I feel like it's a much harder question if you imagine that the bad behavior is in the office, but it's separated from the person's professional job. Like, imagine that the boss in the office is actually... Well, you can't really imagine that he's a good boss. It's just impossible. But imagine that guy was making a lot of money and giving you a raise and et cetera.
Well, definitely the lesson of the last few weeks has been the people who are bad people, like... are really bad people.
Yeah.
And they're bad. Yeah.
All right. Right.
Solve that.
John, did you have a position there, John?
No, I don't have a definitive position that would benefit from additional illumination of this question. Would you rather stop aging at age 30 and live for 30 more years, or stop aging at the age of 70 and live for 70 more years? And presumably, here's the question. Do you live at 70 for 70 more years? Well, stop aging,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. Stop aging
That's
at 70.
Embedded in the question, yeah.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about it.
Can we pick other ages where we do it? Because
sure.
I think the right answer is like 40.
Like our just a few years ago.
Well, I'm now 47 and my body is just not what it used to be.
But 40
was fine.
Can
you believe
that?
I mean, it still looks, you know, I mean.
Well, I guess at what point would you know this?
What point would you know what?
Well, because if you knew you were going to live for 70 years at age 70, then at age 40, you wouldn't let yourself go. You know?
But 40, so you would take your 40-year-old self for 40 more years over your 70-year-old self for 70 more years?
Definitely.
No, really?
I don't think when I'm 70, I don't think I'd feel that way. It's not because I feel like when I'm 70, I'll hate life. It's that I actually feel that that people shouldn't live to be 140. I don't think that's...
Oh.
I think that's against the natural order, and that basically your time is sort of 90. Like, that's
so,
what you get.
Okay.
Well, this
so
answers
you...
the what would you do in a lifeboat if you had to kill somebody question. Well, David, since you want to end it all at 40, it's dinner time.
What if you just didn't worry about that for a second? Like, you gave yourself special dispensation. Then what would you think?
I think probably then 70 and 70, right?
What if you use your...
But none of us would take 30 and 30, it seems like.
I don't think so. That doesn't seem like enough. Also, I didn't think being 30 was so much better than being 40.
Also, I guess it depends what you're going to be like at age 70. What if you used your phone call in the future to figure out how you're going to be at 70? Yeah. To see if you're going to be all right at 70, and then you can make the choice.
You're not old enough that 2025 will do that for you.
But for the purposes of the joke, it was okay.
Okay, true.
Would you pick 70 over? Would you pick 70 over 50?
Yeah, I want aggregate years.
Would you pick 90 over 70?
Yes.
You would?
Really?
90 for 90 more years?
Yes.
What do you think it's going to feel like?
Think about all the books and movies and conversations you can have. You get to see your great-grandchildren.
You really?
They'd all die. They'd be dead. Your great-grandchildren would be very dead.
I've lived to 90. The chances that they're going to be
alive. Have you read any fable or any myth about this ever?
It never ends well.
It doesn't
David
end well.
David has a point about that.
Do you want to turn things to gold?
Well, no, wait a minute. You're the one who wants to find out what the stock market's going to be like so you can make the money. I mean, and if it's a curse at age 90, it's a curse at age 40. It's not like it gets more cursed the longer you live. The Rumpelstiltskin argument would work at age 40 or 90.
And I guess you could always, if you did 90, you could say, well, I can. If I don't like it, I can always kill myself. Unless you're, are you obliged to live to 180?
Yes, you have to live.
Oh.
Yeah. There's an anti-Kevorkian clause.
I pick 70 over 30, 40, 50, and 90. Mm-hmm. Let's do this one. Suppose we live in a state in which it is a requirement for every citizen to run for elected office at least once in their adult life. Think of it like election duty instead of jury duty. You can pick any job, any elected office. What level of government, what position, what do you want to be?
Somebody desperately wants to be on the school board in the first level.
Sign her up. That was a woman.
Huh.
This feels like not an obligation. I would happily do it if I didn't hadn't written so many things that would disqualify me for
every single
running.
Anything.
But I would run. I would happily be a governor or a mayor. I would love to do it. I
would
enjoy
you would be
it.
Good at it.
I would
too.
Hate being a legislator.
Yeah,
I'd hate being a legislator. I would, but I would really, really like to be a governor.
But mayor over governor?
David has no state to be governor.
I think mayor.
He's never
they're
lived
both
in a
fun.
State.
They're both really fun. I think mayors have a little bit more. Power, oddly, like that.
Yeah,
they have
governors
more
are more constrained.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
What
about
what city would you want to be mayor of?
I don't think so. I don't live in Boston, so that would be weird. I'd have to commute.
Well, that leaves only DC. That's the only city you live in.
No, I think being mayor of New York is the greatest job in the world. I think being mayor of New York seems incredibly fun.
Because you get to go to all those Yankees games.
Ugh. What about you guys?
Well, I have two answers. So I want to be on the parole board because that's really important and unsung. And I don't think there's going to be like a long line.
That's great. That's
yeah,
a really good one.
That's really my answer. But also, since I'm writing a book about prosecutors that's about elected prosecutors, I would want to be an elected prosecutor. They have a lot of power.
I'd want to be a mayor, but of a, and I don't know what the size town, but of a manageable city where you could actually, you know, innovate and try stuff out and not...
like Boulder or
I don't know.
Santa Fe or something like that. Burlington,
Vermont.
Wasn't Bernie
Sanders?
Bernie Sanders was mayor of Burlington, wasn't he?
Yeah. No, it'd be nice.
And you and Bernie, I always think of you as the same sentence. Very similar profile.
Yeah.
All right, I've got one here. What's the most useful maxim in your life? Or what maxims do you live by? Do you have any?
This is so much more a John question. You must have like 10 answers to this. I could barely come up with any.
Only have one maxim is my...
So maxims are different than life hacks in that case.
Right,
which
exactly.
You can have an infinite supply.
You cannot have a maxim of maxims. Well, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. That's a good one. The worst thing about somebody isn't the truest thing about them.
Oh, that's a Dickerson favorite. That's a great one. That's a great one. Yeah.
Always go to the funeral.
That's good. Or the life event generally.
The question is, does always go to the funeral have a more gentle version, which is always go to the book party?
Hmm. Often similar. These days.
No, the book party is like the day before the funeral. Anyway. So this is more a work career one, but if you can, if life allows, if finances allow, do the thing you like, not the thing you think you should do.
That's good. I have two. One requires this little story. The one is never go somewhere you can't leave. So I don't tend to get on boats for that reason.
Unless they're docked,
if they're docked. The other is, actually, my brother is here tonight, and he'll probably remember this, is there not many of you probably have seen the movie Street Fighter, but the movie Street Fighter is Raul Julia's final movie, and he plays a character named General Bison. And I probably am misremembering this, so the Street Fighter pedants out there, just lay off. And at the final culminating scene of the movie, the heroine, who's accompanied by Jean-Claude Van Damme, the hero, have finally tracked General Bison down in his lair and are confronting him. And the heroine says to General Bison, "When I was 7 years old, you and your soldiers came to my village. You murdered my mother and my father and my brother and sister in front of me and burned down every building in that village. And ever since that day, every breath I've taken, every step I've taken has been with the intent of seeking revenge on you, of getting revenge against you, General Bison." And General Bison says to her, "For you, that was the most important day of your life. For me, it was Tuesday." And that's kind of the way I feel. Like, you have to remember, like, for you, the things that feel important to you, for other people, it's often, it's like, for them, it's Tuesday.
That did not go where I thought it was going. Maybe that's good.
Wow.
Maybe also it's that you're supposed to remember that you... Wait, this is...
I feel buffaloed.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to do one more question, and then They Might Be Giants are going to come back for a little bit. If you were down to your last $50 to spend on something other than food or shelter, what would you buy?
An ATM.
You were like, you said before, I've got an answer for this one. I was like, oh, didn't realize you were Jackie Gleasoning it. That was the thing you were so excited to have an answer about?
I wasn't excited about it. I just said that was the first answer that came to my head, and I didn't reflect upon it in the interim.
Isn't the proper answer either music or a book? Like, that's the virtuous
answer.
Well,
is this it for your whole life, the last $50 you can spend before you are...
Did it say for the rest of your life? No.
Or is it just like
just
the
said
afternoon?
That's all you have, but your food and shelter is taken care of.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Slate Plus.
I like that answer. That's
cool.
A good answer.
I would buy that phone that could call future.
That costs more than $50.
What would you buy? What would you spend?
$50.
Do you already own things?
Amount.
How much do you have? Right, and how long is the $50? Let's say it's a week.
Well,
a week.
But you have food and shelter.
Right.
You have food and shelter, but nothing else? I need something to read.
Books, yeah.
Yeah.
I think I might get a bike. I'd get, if I could find a cheap bike. I think I would like that. I really like biking around.
$50 bike, I feel nervous.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be a great bike.
Like, you could, well...
You have
you could borrow
food and shelter and clothes, presumably.
All right, okay.
Yeah, well, so the problem is you could borrow a bike just like you could borrow a book. So you might be... What if you were housebound? That would take care of your bike problem. By the time we get to the end of this...
What's I that? Think you can't borrow things. Borrow things in this. Yeah.
So, all right. So the libraries are closed.
Do you have heat? Do you need logs to make a fire? I guess that's part
it's
of
summer.
Shelter. It's summer. Yeah. Okay.
Huh.
Netflix. I was thinking about Netflix. That's a good idea. Or, what about, a pool? If it's summer, or like a beach, some, I don't know, entry to a beach, going to a national park.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Just
entry, a ticket to something.
But I think the thing is, would you buy something useful or just be like, okay, let's blow it on pleasure? I mean,
right.
I think going to the beach, that's nice.
You go to the beach, you go to a national park. Yeah.
You'd get bored of beach for a week, wouldn't you?
The national park would be better.
Yeah, that's good.
Right.
There we go. Ladies and gentlemen, They Might Be Giants.
From my electrical wow, it's a simple message, and I'm leaving out.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming only on Hulu.
How many days before a long-planned event can you send an invitation without undermining the line you write that says, we'd love to have you? Is that right?
Right. So I got an invitation. It was like, we'd really love to see you. Oh, that's cool. When is the event? It's in a day.
So a day is not the answer, you don't think?
Well, my first reaction was, wow, a lot of people said no.
Yeah. Wait, but and then did you not want to go? Was it a party?
I can't remember what it was. Okay. It was something to which I couldn't attend because I had to wash my socks for my next hiking.
But don't you feel like when you're extending invitations and you do something last minute, it's not with ill will and it's not necessarily plan B or C? Or even if it is, it could be like wholeheartedly
depends
with love.
Depends what city you live in. Oh, I mean,
you
I think
mean
in
your city, yeah.
Well, I think
my
yeah.
city,
yeah.
right. Like amazing there's anything to go to at all. It's yeah. true.
I mean, I have often forgotten somebody who's a dear friend or something, you know, and be like, oh, but you write them a note and you say, I can't believe this. Of all the people I wanted to invite, you know, and then presumably because they are a friend, they know that you're absent-minded and slow-witted and a late planner and they forgive you.
Right. There are very few people actually in the world who owe you a decent, right? Like there, it's a good idea to keep one's feeling of being insulted to a minimum in general, and not
that's
have that
maxim.
Many people.
That's a good maxim.
Yes,
right? That is a good maxim to live by.
That's absolutely right. Now, you're totally right. And the corollary is also to not feel a sense of obligation by somebody who offers you a false sense of "we'd love to see you."
That's true too. That's yeah. true. Right.
Yeah. All right. We've worked that out. Put that on the maxim list on the fridge.
It's good to be open to last minute invitations, both to extending them and taking them in as long as
but
if it's someone asking you to do something professionally and it's super last minute, then I mean this I think this well because sometimes infrequently I'm the only woman on a panel or whatever, and so it's really clear that happens here, but you guys don't like sub me in at the last minute, you're sort of stuck with me. But in the world, this is something that happens. And so when I get a last-minute invitation for something like that, I think, oh, the woman dropped out and they need another woman. And I'm sure I'm correct about that, actually.
We got a little spicy one. We've got GabFest After Dark here. So if you're offered the option to extend your spouse's life by 20 years by having an affair with someone you're attracted to and your spouse will never find out about it, would you do it?
Aren't the incentives in this question messed up? Right?
But shouldn't it be the other
shouldn't
way?
It, shouldn't
spouse,
it be if it would extend your spouse's life by 20 years, would you let your spouse have an affair with somebody? Isn't that a more interesting, isn't that more spicy?
Yeah.
So how long is the affair? Is it like a really long, involved, distracting
affair? It's about 20 years.
All right. Well, no. We'll dictate.
Wait. I think I'm getting the wrong end of this deal.
Well, you're never gonna find. You never find out about it, right? So you don't know.
Well, but you can't grant assent to the.
Okay, but we'll say. Okay, we'll say it's a 2-year affair.
Ooh, that seems long. Is it like very emotionally involved?
Because at that point, what are
just sex?
At that point, what are the remaining 18 years going to be really like? Just 18 years of recriminations.
Well, no, you never find out, right? That's the key. You never find out. Or you wanted to find... Maybe it's better if you find out. You get to, honey, I'm extending your life by you going and having an affair with Jim from HR.
Well, and then who gets to pick the... Is it of your spouse's choosing?
Yeah, your spouse's choosing,
of course.
Yeah,
I don't think you get to choose the affair partner.
Yeah, I mean, the answer is obviously yes. The answer is obviously yes.
If you're doing it, yes. If it's you allowing it, yes.
But then what if it's you? I guess which gets to a slightly uglier thing. What about the original question as framed?
The original question, would you have an affair, extend your spouse's life by having an affair? Yeah, I think you do. Yes. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how that mechanism works.
Yeah.
I feel like you get in trouble whichever answer you pick with this question.
No, no, because it's all benevolent. You're only thinking of your spouse. And
Right, that's... well, that's the funny thing about the question, sort of framed as a self-sacrifice. Actually, like,
right.
It
oh,
might not be.
Oh, okay, I'll rake the yard, take out the garbage, and all right, I'll go have an affair to extend your life for 20 years.
But, if, you know, I mean, not to cast a pall on this, but if you said it was your child, you'd say yes in a second, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely,
right.
Of course.
So, why?
But wait, you're saying yes anyway, so why does that make this more, a more acute version of the question? I'd say yes faster.
Well, I'm saying it.
What if
I would actually
no,
strip
mean that
in
you
the
actually
moment.
Like want your spouse to die earlier? In which case, isn't that sort of so you can go have an affair?
What if it's a stranger? What if it's a stranger, but you know explicitly that you having an affair will extend that stranger's life 20 years?
Oh, that's good. Tell me more about the stranger.
They live by the golden rule.
Yes, right. It's an act of charity. Yes. Right. Yes.
I don't think you have an affair or do very many things to... how could you know? That seems too attenuated to me.
They were hungry and you fed them. They were naked and you clothed them.
Yeah. They were dying.
They were naked. They were naked, all right.
On Death, Sex, and Money, we feature interviews with you, our community of listeners, getting honest about uncomfortable things.
I developed an illness where it isn't safe for me to drive. A friend once said to me, sex is like air. You don't think about it until you're not getting enough. This is a similar sort of thing if you just replace sex with driving.
Listen to Death, Sex, and Money wherever you get podcasts.
Oh, yeah, I really want to do this one. Okay. Would you rather have cat's whiskers that you cannot shave off or cut, or a long furry tail?
That is literally the easiest question I've ever had. I would like a long furry tail, period. It's
oh,
not
no,
even like
that's
a
what
no.
I was gonna say.
If I could get a transplant today for a furry tail, I would do it.
David has just added himself as a furry.
I felt the same way. Would
if you, I was going to be something, I would be a furry. That is for sure.
What about
your
you?
Beard has incipient furriness, is it?
It's a little coarse.
Yeah, no, of course you pick the tail, because the tail has more versatility as an accessory, really.
But David has whiskers.
They're not cat's whiskers. Would you take the whiskers?
No, I totally would take the tail. I didn't realize it was so obvious, though.
Is there anyone...
I'm trying to make a case for the whiskers. Oh, yeah.
Is there anyone, not to make it pejorative, is there anyone
yeah.
in the audience who would take whiskers?
Minority position.
Interesting. They're functional whiskers, definitely.
You but what does that mean?
What does that mean for a
functional.
Person? What do you do
what,
with
you can
your
stir your cocktail?
No, you sense that you sense danger.
Oh. You sense danger?
Is that what they do?
Hey, look... If the danger is that close to your face, can't you see it?
Maybe it should be like dog's ears. That's really useful. Ears that work like a dog. I think I would choose those maybe over a tail, even though they would be
what
on my
animal,
head.
What animal quality would you most want?
Well, besides flight, which is obvious, I would want it. I'd like a tail. I would love a tail.
More
like
than a sense of smell or hearing from like a
I
dog?
I would like a tail.
No!
There are a lot of like really good MIT scientists here tonight. Just know that there's a market.
I bet you could have a tail. It doesn't seem that hard to make a tail.
But innovation.
I would totally pick, I think I would pick sound, but I'm really torn about the smell, except then you have to smell the bad things.
Wait, is it, so is flight is off the, because it's
flight
too obvious.
Too obvious.
Too obvious. Okay, too obvious. I would want the cheetah-like reflexes. I mean, more than I already have.
What about, would you want to be able to rock climb like a mountain goat or...
Well, no, because then you'd be a mountain goat. I guess you don't have to inhabit the body of the thing. You just have the talent.
I would want to move like a mountain goat, maybe the most, actually.
I'd rather run fast than be able to climb. I guess I've lost my climbing fixation.
Huh. I feel like the climbing is more out of body experience.
It is,
more ethereal.
Yeah.
Is it insulting to get someone the gift of a cleaning service?
So who is it?
Let's poll. Can we poll this one? Because I feel like it. Is it insulting to get someone a gift of clean service, first we're going to say it is insulting, then we'll say it is not. It is insulting to get someone the gift of a cleaning service. It is not insulting to get someone the gift. Wow.
I think it depends who the person is. I don't think you can give your parents or your parents-in-law a cleaning service gift. That seems like super aggressive. And maybe not
What about
siblings.
Your daughter-in-law?
Oh, no. Probably actually also not that. Any fraught family relationship, this is not a good
your
idea.
Your friend.
Your friend, well, yeah.
And
I
are
you
getting
could.
It out of? Are you getting it just out of the blue, or is it their birthday?
It's their birthday. It's their birthday.
Okay, and they've just returned from hiking.
They just had a baby. That's when people need a cleaning.
No, that's different. If they just had a baby, that's fine. No, it's more like this is their daily, you know, their everyday life.
Is the house messy or dirty? Is it that they have like really moldy sponges at their sink? That's I don't like that.
The audio didn't capture Emily's delightful expression there. So why do you think it's okay? I actually think it's hugely insulting. I would be hugely insulted if someone did that to me.
Hmm.
I feel like the way that is something which is very
personal,
and to pass judgment on someone else's life and to say they should be improved. It's like buying somebody who's overweight a gym membership.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not a cool thing to do.
But what if it's just a nice way to take a load off of your finances by giving you a...
Yes, there's a model of it which is like that. There's a model which is, this is
a
service a person wants for themselves. It's a luxury. Where you go to their house and you see that they live like pigs, and you're like, they shouldn't live like pigs. What they really need is a cleaning service. Maybe they don't want a cleaning service. Maybe they like living like pigs.
What about if your neighbor has a really messy lawn and you offer them, I don't know, usually people do this just by putting the name of the landscaping service like in a card in the mailbox.
Listen, if you nudge them into landscaping, then they're going to get a leaf blower. And then every Saturday morning at 8 a.m., the damn leaf blower is going to be going. So let
That'll
them
ruin my son's leaf
rake. Let them live wrapped in the vines of their wisteria and...
If it's only wisteria, it's not really a problem.
The period of your life that defines you is an interesting question I want to hear.
Okay, do that.
What period of your life defined you?
For me, it is the period when I had my first job in journalism at the City Paper. I was learning
20s.
To be a journalist. In my mid-20s, I met Hannah Rosen, who would become my wife. That's right. Not having an affair to prolong her life.
That you know of.
The,
still
remember
alive.
The whole joke was whether he knew or didn't know.
She is still alive. Good point. That's when I learned professional habits. I learned my profession. I learned what it meant to be in love with somebody and to build a life together. That's definitely it.
Fascinating. Because my period is from the same time, not when you met your wife, but from when I met my wife at college, because it coincided with the period of junior and senior year of becoming intensely interested in a specific area of study, which then turned out to be the thing that I would do for the rest of my professional career, assuming I don't follow my dream as becoming a, I don't know what my dream is. See, I'm so bereft of other options. So I wonder if it's really the meeting of your spouse that's so far in this experiment. Two of us have said that. Emily, would you?
There's a lot of pressure here.
Set up.
Sorry, I didn't mean to do that at all.
My husband never listens to this show, so maybe I can say whatever I want. He'll never know. Let's see. Well, no, I think that. That all makes a lot of sense. I guess so for me, I got married when I was 25, I think. And so that feels young to me. But then I didn't really... Then I tried to be a journalist for a lousy newspaper. And then I went to law school. And then I was a journalist for publications I liked better. And so I would actually put it later. My kids were born when I was 28 and 30, I think. And so then I would, so That is the most life-transforming event that's ever happened to me, for sure. Right. But I think I would say that it was like my early 30s when I had really little kids and I was trying to figure out how to be the professional self I wanted to be. Because I think actually having two young kids is the hardest time to be a parent.
For sure.
And for me, it coincided with this like important. And then my husband had to really like support me and help me through all of that. So he's still crucial. Okay.
All right, so we're going to do one more question, then bring back They Might Be Giants. So, audience question. If you've been dating for months and she takes you to the Conundrum show, does that make it a great night to tell her you love her for the first time?
Yes! Yes, yes, yes. We love the idea of being associated with such a moment.
What? Yeah, I mean, just to, not to raise the stakes, but this is a defining moment in your life.
They Might Be Giants.
Marching on, and time is still marching on. This thing will soon be at an end, and now it's even sooner, and now it's even sooner, and now it's even sooner. This day will soon be at an end, and now it's even sooner, and now it's sooner still. You're older than you've ever been, and now you're even older. And now you're even older, and now you're even older. You're older than you've ever been, and now you're even older, and now you're older still.
Birds are calling to sing along, but my window's painted shut, and all that year of chorus taught me is out of style and long forgot. Yeah.
rest of the world. Tell me how can I sing like a girl and not be objectified as if I were a girl.
Thank you very much.
If you want to understand what is happening in the United States right now, you really need to understand what's happening with the courts, the law, and the Supreme Court. The battle between democracy and whatever this cage match is that we're witnessing, it's going to be won and lost at the ballot box, but it's also going to be won and lost in the courtrooms. I'm Dahlia Lithwick. I host Slate's legal podcast, Amicus, and we are doubling our output, bringing you weekly episodes from here on in, because how else can we keep an eye on the many trials of Donald Trump, the conservative legal movement's assaults on our rights, the Supreme Court's latest slate of environmental gutting, gun safety eviscerating cases on the docket? So follow Amicus wherever you get your podcasts, new episodes dropping every Saturday morning.
Now, let's go to the lightning round. John, Marty, are you going to, all right, due to some Baroque genetic condition, you have to give up either all food and beverage over room temperature or all food and beverage under room temperature. Which do you choose?
Marty Beller, snare for over and kick drum for under.
I think this is really hard.
That's an under from our drummer.
Wait, you're giving, wait, sorry, so let's keep it, what are you going to continue to consume? So it's, what are you going
to... Cold food or hot food?
Cold, yeah, are you going to keep the cold food or keep the hot food?
So I eat much more cold food than hot food, but Marty's, it makes keeping me the hot. Really sad to imagine giving up hot food. That seems
so
like
you're
an
cold.
Important thing.
Marty's no, keeping the hot.
I think maybe I have to go over to hot, even though I'd be giving up like 80% of my diet. What would happen?
Oh, so your point is that the hot food, even though you eat it less frequently, is that much more powerful.
Yeah, I never have a hot breakfast or a hot lunch. But
is that just from laziness or choice?
Both.
Yeah.
Both.
No, I know. I mean, I agree. Like a good hot breakfast. Can't beat that.
Which is a reminder, Blue Apron is one of our sponsors. And you can make fantastic home-cooked meals and take pride in your own cooking.
Is anyone going to pick cold on the whole stage? Maybe you should ask the room.
No Blue Apron what? Meals are cold. They're all warm.
Ice cream.
John?
I'm a caffeine addict, and I need hot coffee in the morning, so everything else falls away in importance. That's...
What about when you're really hot and sweaty and you need a cold drink?
But wait.
Yes. Too bad.
Just put on your dirty clothes.
But here, actually, this is a crucial question. So on the hot coffee front, what about you'd be giving up a cold martini? And not just for breakfast.
And a cold beer. Serious.
And a cold Gatorade.
Very serious.
Yeah, this is...
It's where cold... Ooh. Bubble tea. I would be bereft of bubble tea.
Although, maybe you could get used to a hot,
you know,
hot martini.
Room temperature gin, you get used to it after a while.
Yeah.
All right, so who... All right, so we're going to do... What do you want to keep? So if you want to keep cold, we'll go first, and hot... Go second. Who wants to keep cold food? Who wants to keep hot? Stronger presence for cold than I would have expected, but Emily, you made a very good case for it.
Yeah.
All right. Also, next, you are wrongfully convicted for a crime you didn't commit. You're up for parole. Do you admit to the crime you didn't commit and get parole and live free, or continue to proclaim your innocence and stay in prison?
So I hear a lot of stories of people who do plead guilty or admit guilt, but then they, and either they get out or not, then it's very hard to live their lives. That's really tough. On the other hand, if you imagine staying in prison like for the rest of your life, that seems, I guess, worse.
I would definitely admit the crime that I didn't commit. Definitely.
And as a member of the parole board, how would that affect your view?
Well, actually, the reason this is important and happens is that you usually can't get parole unless you admit responsibility for your crime. And so if you maintain your innocence, you can't get out.
All right.
What do you guys think?
It depends what the crime is.
Oh, it has to be a bad crime. It should be.
Where you're in for life.
I feel like it depends on how bad jail is.
Well, I guess that would depend. Yeah, because if
you
were in
jail, is ever good? Like, you can't leave. That's
well,
what
no,
you know.
But no, but it's
state, you know, hard time.
Yeah,
like could be
really.
Bad.
I just feel like
just pick a side.
Freedom.
Pick a side.
I'm with you, David. I would admit guilt, but I might blink in Morse code in my eyes like I'm innocent.
Yeah, like be like, yeah, I did it.
Yeah,
Marty.
Marty is
going to stay
a man
in the
of
can.
Conviction and yeah. high morals.
He's going to lead the
drummers
house.
Have the strength.
He's going to dig his way out with those sticks. John, did you say?
You stay in prison for life or for the remainder of your term?
Doesn't say.
I'm going to add to this. So imagine it was murder. And it's the difference between getting out now versus 20 more years.
I think if it's murder, you don't cop to it. You took some, I don't know. No, it's not. No, I think it's just, it's one of my maxims.
How about also that you're not going to kill anyone in the first place?
Yeah, no, that's definitely the maxim. Don't kill anyone. Although, you know, you could have exceptions.
But not present company.
Which fictional character would you most want to be friends with if they were plopped into your life here in 2017? I would say Lyra from His Dark Materials.
We should just always answer
I always
that. We both always want that.
Lizzie Bennet from Pride and Prejudice would be super fun to hang out with. And then...
Really?
Yeah. Mm. Oh, yeah. She'd be so fun to chat with.
Yeah, all right.
She'd be a great friend. And then I think the Clark Gable from It Happened One Night. I would pick that.
Not Butler, Clark Gable.
No, the Clark Gable character. I forget what his name is. Whatever the character he plays. He's a journalist.
Movies. This has opened up a whole new realm of possibility. Then you could go to, like, Catherine Hepburn.
Oh, right,
because
it's fiction,
queen.
Fictional character. Yeah, okay.
Ooh, she's so annoying in the African.
I like that character.
All right, have fun.
Margot Channing, Room Temperature Gin.
I hadn't thought of films. Gosh. Gandalf.
All right.
Marty, you go.
I'm down to be Kermit the Frog.
Oh, excellent choice. That's a really good choice. That's a great choice. I'm torn on this one. So I also remember no one's name. But the main character in Middlemarch, I really love her. Maybe Dorothea might be her name. And this would be complicated and a little dark, but the main character in House of Mirth, whose name is not
Lily,
a
Lily Bart.
Yeah, Lily Bart, yes.
Huh.
Presumably when she's alive.
Yeah. And in hopes of keeping her alive.
Yeah.
That would be
spoiler.
Part of the idea. She needed a friend, right?
Like, yeah, she does
needed
need a friend.
A good friend.
That's true.
I would feel very necessary.
That's true. You
would
really have a
helpful.
Lot riding on your friendship.
Exactly. Yeah. I feel like I could be of some help.
What two books define you or most important to you?
Oh, don't do most important. Define you, maybe.
Define you.
Emily?
Well, the book that I've read over and over again that's like the most relevant is The Journalist and the Murderer. But the books that I feel from my childhood that I think about a lot are the Betsy Tacy Tibb books. Does anybody know those books? Probably nobody on the stage. They are mostly read by girls, but I think they were great. And a lot of my ideas about family and friendship and what a good, happy life is come from those books. They're not books that are about a tragedy or like orphans or anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Mine are similar to yours, Emily. I mean, I would say Farmer Boy, the Laura Ingalls Wilder about the boy growing up on a farm in upstate New York because he eats a lot of pie and he works really hard.
Although,
works really hard.
I have to say, of the Laura Ingalls Wilder books, I thought of those too, that's the one that it's the most boring. It has the least plot in it, that book.
It's true. I like books where nothing really happens.
Well,
it
that
makes
book
me feel
fulfills... I mean, there are safe. Stretches in all those books that are descriptive, but that one in particular really has no arc. Anyway.
Yeah.
Sometimes he buys just books full of blank paper.
He trains an ox. He trains his team of oxen.
Yes, the one thing that does happen is the teacher threatens to whip them because she can't control them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other one maybe is, I think, David Copperfield, because my father read it to me when I was 11 or something, and I just the memory of just sitting with him is just very important sense memory for me.
Oh, I'm totally took Define to mean a different thing. I thought you meant as like
well, you could.
Who you are
you
now.
Could define it a different way.
Well, no, because now I'm thinking.
The Murderer was like that.
Yeah. The Glory and the Dream, New Seeds of Contemplation and Bob Dylan's lyrics are probably...
This is just an evasive answer, but Flatland by Edwin Abbott, along with that person over there. And The Ice Storm by Rick Moody kind of tells the story of my childhood. So.
But not your adult life.
No longer my adult life.
That's good.
Yeah. It's an obvious one, but Catcher in the Rye, you know, gave you a definition of anti-authority, for sure.
Yeah. Important.
Yeah. And I don't know about define you, but there's a book, recent book called Wonder, which is now...
Oh, that's such a wonderful book. That is
which just,
book.
Yeah, just, I cried and cried, yeah.
I think the shock of the new, which is it's about modern art, Robert Hughes, the guy who wrote the Australia book, and I'm rereading Please Kill Me, and it's having a profound effect.
Wait, what is what?
Please Kill Me.
It's an oral history of the New York punk rock scene, minus the people that wouldn't talk to them.
I'm very concerned that you're saying that book defines you. That's I'm worried about.
We'll talk about it after the show, John.
All right, last question. The six of us are adrift in a life raft with no food. Starvation is looming. How do we decide whether to eat someone? If the answer to number one is yes, how do you decide whom?
Oh, man.
Yes, and it's definitely a John, but which John?
I beg to differ.
No, you've already answered.
I beg to differ. I just want to say, Marty is in incredibly excellent physical shape. He spends all his time drumming.
Right. But
he's the healthiest eater probably on the stage. Right?
You've already said that age 40 is living too long, so you've passed that.
You didn't understand it. It's age 80, dude. You get to live 40 more years.
No, but you said at some point that... Well, so what's your what's the age that you think
you
should terminate
someone?
Your life?
40 to 80. 40
right.
to 80.
Okay.
I think you would want to eat someone.
Yeah, I'm pro-cannibalism. I would eat and I would be eaten.
I'm sorry. You wouldn't get on the boat in the first place.
But I think if you're...
That's true.
Is there any point to eating and be eaten? Like, does that idea that you eat a little
bit... Well, how do we decide? How are we going to decide?
Oh, that's an interesting question. How much longer
could you... This is a good group, because, like, we have two groups of three here, because we were on a boat tour together, and it's like, oh, now we've split.
Is there a way to consume portions of each body in a way that didn't kill the host, but that prolonged everyone's life? Is there a doctor in the house? Yeah.
I feel like you couldn't get enough.
You
of a
couldn't
meal
really get
for
enough
it
calories.
To help
when you
without...
create a wound, and that, how would you treat that wound?
Yeah,
well, that's what I'm saying.
Yucky.
You'd need one hell of a first.
So
aid
we're gonna
kit.
Vote. All of us are gonna vote.
See, David would be really.
And now I'm
gonna
team up with one of them.
Yeah.
And it's gonna be great. That's would right. you guys vote? How would we decide who to eat?
God. Secret ballot. Marty Beller.
Well,
eat Marty Beller.
Yeah. Whoever said they would no longer eat cold food would be a good person to...
I'm not eating anyone. I just want that. I'm not getting involved in deciding, and I'm not eating anyone.
Then it's you, Ellie.
And see.
I would like to be dead for that first. I want to be alive and eaten alive. The eaten dead is okay with me, I guess.
No. Freshness
first. I mean,
if
I died, I would be totally fine with you eating me. Absolutely. 100%.
Would you? What if you were just sleeping? Oh, I'm sorry.
Just
I thought.
Make sure I'm not going to wake up.
Just
first.
Don't
That's
nod
all
off.
I ask.
Yeah.
I want to thank everyone who submitted a conundrum, both online and here live at the show. I'm sorry we weren't able to get to all of them. That is our show for today. The Political Gabfest is produced by the superb Jocelyn Frank. Jason Gambrell helped out specially today. Our researcher, Izzy Rowe, did a wonderful job collecting and organizing conundra. Faith Smith organized the hell out of the show. The Wilbur Theater, chaste and hospitable. Thank you so much. And most of all, thank you to John Flansburgh, John Linnell, and Marty Beller of They Might Be Giants for bringing magic to the stage here. Follow us on Twitter at @SlateGabFest. For Emily Bazelon and John Dickerson, I'm David Plotz. We will talk to you in 2018.
This is Dahlia Lithwick, host of Slate's legal podcast, Amicus. If you're listening to this show, you might be interested in Amicus's live show that we're hosting in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, May the 14th. My colleague, Mark Joseph Stern, and I will be talking to some amazing guests, including Sherrilyn Ifill and a sitting state Supreme Court justice, all about how originalism, a relatively recently invented way of interpreting the Constitution, has taken over the Supreme Court and radically reshaped the law. It's been doctrinal rocket fuel for the conservative legal movement and facilitated the rolling back of abortion rights, the expansion of gun rights, and the obliteration of the separation of church and state. And as another wildly consequential Supreme Court term careers to its end, the court's originalists are on a tear. But there's something you can do about it, and we hope you'll join us in D.C. on May 14th to explore the possible pathways out of the current situation. Go to slate.com/amicuslive for tickets.